And thank you for being with us this Lord's Day morning. And then we wish for everybody a great week beginning, Thanksgiving week. I know that many of you are having company. If you do, enjoy that. And we hope it will be a great time for you and the people you love. For those of you who are traveling to big company with family somewhere else at some time during this week, safe travels for you, and we hope much joy. And for those of you who are doing both, that is having company and traveling, we wish you some rest at some point in the process as well. All with thanks, of course. This month and next month, we're using the very, very practical letter of James to try to think through some ways in which our faith becomes a reality in our homes, in our families. I think maybe a lot of us who are sitting here have seen or maybe have in our homes at some place one of these plaques or posters which has some form of family rules on it. I've seen them be personalized where it will say McFarland family rules or whatever your family is. I've seen sometimes them just say our family rules and there'll be a list of things. I copied down one list like that. Find time to be together. Some of these are capitals. Some will say them louder. Say please and thank you. Some of them are cursive. I'll say them gentle. Keep your promises. Hug each other. Be first to say I'm sorry. Love one another. Look for ways to help out. Be kind to one another. Play nicely and share. Be patient. Be you. Respect each other. Always tell the truth. Say I love you every day. Makes me tired just to read the list. James has his own list. If you're watching, if you're listening, if you're paying attention to what he says about the ways in which God's children learn to relate to him, you'll notice that he has his own list of guidelines for each person who in any way relates to a family. And I assume that takes in about all of us, doesn't it? Notice in James chapter 1, we have a context in which relationship definitely is running in the background. There is a God who is the Father of lights, verse 17. There is our having been brought forth by the word of truth. Brought forth is a maternal term. Suggest family in that way. And then James addresses his readers as my beloved brothers, verse 19. So if you're thinking there's father, mother, and beloved brothers or sisters, there's relationship running. So what James talks about is, of course, talking about relating to God. But remember, you don't relate to a thing. You relate to a person. And personal actions are involved. And what James calls for here is the fulfilling of each one of the obligations that that one has toward all the others in the family. So we're thinking about here the ways in which each Christian person is accountable to the other members of his family or her family and trying to practice his or her faith in front of the rest of them. And when you look at it in that way, the principles which James identifies in this short passage jump out at us as, yes, very basic, real tasks which are involved in relating to the other persons around us, no matter what all else needs to be done. These things are basic. And I can see five of them in this passage here that I ask you to think about with me. Number one, James says, You're responsible toward the others for being a ready listener. Verse 19 beginning, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear. And of course, that's not talking about whether you have to wear a hearing aid or not. It means that you or me or whichever one of us is involved are paying attention to the people around us and are ready not just to hear the sounds, but also to take in what they mean and to watch for the facial expressions and the body language and the tone of voice and think about what need is being expressed by that person around us. James is drawing on two dependable sources for practical guidance when he says this. One of them is Jesus and the other is Proverbs. Jesus, James' brother in the flesh, dwelt among us in order to understand us and then spoke to us. For about 30 years, he's the carpenter's son. Then for about three, he's the teacher. That ratio is eye-opening when you stop to think about its implications. Jesus and his teaching would often say something and say, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." What he was meaning is take it to heart, pay attention to it, make use of it. He would say, take care how you hear, Luke 8, verse 18. And then pay attention to what you hear, Mark 4 and verse 24. And you and I can say, yeah, but he was talking about the parables or the lessons he taught. But those actions about hearing would not become less important the better we know people, or the closer they were to us, they'd become more important. And then the other source for James is the Proverbs. The Proverbs are the short lessons in living that are learned from long experience. In fact, when I read these, your experience will be long enough for you to be able to say, yeah, that's how it is. Proverbs 15:31, the ear that listens to life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Reproof is correction. And you say, somebody can't hear a lesson, somebody that can't hear advice is in trouble. 18:13, if one gives an answer before he hears, it's his folly and shame. Have you ever done that? You thought you knew what was about to be said, and you answered it, and it was the wrong question. Do you ever feel like one of the game shows, Jeopardy or something, and you try to give the answer before you know the question, or you try to give the question before you know the answer, whichever way they do it. Chapter 19, 20, listen to advice and accept instruction that you may gain wisdom in the future. Suppose the wisdom is in how to treat your family member. Suppose the reproof has to do with relating to them. The meeting of the need, listening. When James says, be quick to hear, what he's really doing is identifying the essential beginning point in the process of relating. The very first thing about dealing with the other person is to know where that person is coming from. A book that we give to our couples who are going to get married has in it a quote from one writer who says, it's impossible to overemphasize the immense need that humans have to be really listened to. Listen to all the conversations in our world between nations as well as between couples. They are, for the most part, dialogues of the deaf. That's not a very hopeful quote, is it? But I wonder how true it might be. I read about one wife who grew tired enough of her husband's almost chronic habit of hearing but not listening. His failure to listen. I'll leave out the names to protect me. I mean the innocent. This wife tries the experiment at the dinner table after one especially busy day. She passes the chicken to her husband and asks him if he'd like to try her new recipe, fried chicken breaded with arsenic. And he takes it and he eats it with gusto and he tells her it's delicious. That level of attention is what we're talking about here. What do we mean by listening? The little book I mentioned has this paragraph. When we're truly listening to another person, we're not thinking about what we're going to say when he stops talking. We're not busy formulating our response. We're concentrating on what's being said. Listening is also complete acceptance without judgment of what is said and how it's said. By acceptance, we do not mean agreeing with everything that's said. We mean understanding what the other person is saying and what the other person feels. Real listening means we should be able to repeat both what the other person has said and what we thought that other person was feeling when he was speaking to us. That means, as one writer says, you got to listen with three ears. One here, and one in between. And the one in between is watching, taking in, digesting from the body language and the tone of voice and what said, what the other person meant. And the biggest benefit that comes from that process is respect. I respect you. I'm interested in you. I care about what's going on in your life. Whether it's God or a husband or a wife or a son or a daughter or a brother or sister, that's important work. Be a ready listener. Second, be a thoughtful talker. Thoughtful talker. Here we have, know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak. So when I say talker, I mean talk, not retort. That's what we're after, and that's what the relationship requires. Stephen Covey used to say it this way. You understood, now seek to be understood. Being silent is not what we mean by being slow to speak. Being distant is not what we mean by being slow to speak. Being withdrawn is not what we mean. You can't just say, I'm going to obey the first requirement by not ever saying anything. You can't relate that way. The Proverbs emphasize what gracious, gentle talk at the right time and the right way brings to our relationships. Healing, chapter 12, verse 18. Life, chapter 15 and verse 4. Joy and gladness, 15:23. And sweetness, Proverbs 16:24. It's words that add that to family. Being slow to speak does mean being wise in what we say. Seeing to it that what is said is, in the terms of Proverbs, in due season, and that it's an apt, APT, an apt answer. That it, in other words, it fits the need we've just identified in our listening. It addresses what's going on. The problem is that hasty and thoughtless and inconsiderate words do more harm to relationships than anything else in the world. Would you agree with that? Someone said, The human tongue is only a few inches from the brain, but when you listen to some people talk, they seem miles apart. The problem with that is that we don't include ourselves in the some people. Things get said that introduce a world of hurt, and it's often lasting hurt, into our experience. Some of the worst examples are, first, sarcastic words that cut the soul. Do you know the counselors say that research shows that sarcasm is the biggest enemy of healthy family relationships? Second, unkind words that pierce the heart. And third, untrue words that crush the spirit. Those are generally things that get said not because somebody sat down and really thought it over and said to themselves, you know, I think I'll say something really mean and sarcastic. I think I'll lie. They're usually things that just happen when we haven't thought it over. So it's the wisdom of long experience, again, Proverbs, to give it some thought, to consider what need it is you're trying to address, and then to speak with goodwill. Listen to some of these statements from the Proverbs about being thoughtful before you are verbal. Chapter 15, verse 28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Or 16:23, the heart of the righteous makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. 17:27, whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. 21:23, whoever keeps his mouth and his tongue will keep himself, and I add in parenthesis, and his family, out of trouble. And 29:20, do you see a man who's hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. Be a quick listener and be a thoughtful talker. And number three, keep a steady temperament. The last part of verse 19, verse 20. Be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. I've said it the way I have here because it's hard for anybody to relate safely to a person who is temperamental. And what I mean by that, what the word means, is who is liable to rapid and intense changes of mood. And especially if that involves anger, which James is talking about here. And if you watch, you can see the progression. One of us doesn't listen to understand where the other person's coming from. Then we jump to a conclusion and spout off some unwise word, and then anger erupts. And anger may smolder and become a festering grudge, or it may explode in a fit of rage. And either way, it hurts the one who has it, and unfortunately, hurts the ones who are around in the area. James is so right. The anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. What the anger of man may produce is littleness or yelling or, God forbid, abuse, but not righteousness. The young people and I on Wednesday nights have been learning that being slow to anger is actually being godly, like God. What James is getting at is that being slow to anger is also being mature enough to contribute to a healthy relationship. And again, I take you to the Proverbs. Just think of some of these statements. 17 and 29. A man of quick temper acts foolishly. Whoever is slow to anger has understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. 15:18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. 16:32. Whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. In other words, there's nobody stronger than the one who can control himself. 19:11. Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it's his glory to overlook an offense. 29:11. A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. So there's, you add them together and you see the drift of it. Slow to anger, having control, ruling your spirit, choosing to hold it back and to act in interest of the relationship. That's a family rule in God's family. I read of a little boy, 4 years old, who's staying with his grandma. She's tried every way she can to teach Nick, and I'm sorry if Nick is here today, but to teach Nick to count to 10 when he started to get angry and not to throw a tantrum. It was becoming a problem for the little guy, but he was learning, and it wasn't long before Grandma had occasion to remind him, count to 10, Nick, count to 10. So he started. 1, 2, 3, and so on until he ended. 11, 12. It was quiet for a few seconds while Nick looked at Grandma to see if she had caught what he had just done. And when she looked at him, then with a knowing expression and nod of his head, he said to her, some people need to count to 12. He was learning, wasn't he? In 2003, Dr. Les Carter wrote The Anger Trap. And in it, he talks about what happens. He says that whatever your method is, whether it's counting or talking to yourself or whatever, what you got to get down to is simply internal focus. The control issues part of this. In order to manage it, he says you have to look inside yourself. And he says this, you got to ponder if the traits, what the traits you want to have are. Do you want to be kind and patient? Do you believe in the qualities of goodness and fairness? How about rudeness and belligerence? Do you want those traits to define you? Or would you prefer to use respectfulness and encouragement instead? You're the only person who can choose that. Fourth step. Be a better, I need to learn from Nick here how to count. Have a clean heart, verse 21. James says, therefore, I think the therefore at the beginning of this verse is important. What he's getting at is that the thing he's mentioned so far, that is, anger, words, hearing, all begin in the heart. James is telling us you can't do what I'm asking you to do with an ugly heart. Good relationships can't grow out of soil like that or be built on foundations like that. But if listening to understand and speaking to build up and holding back the spirit for a good reason, though they're not natural, are necessary. And he says what we need to do this is clean hearts. The removal of the ungodly and the selfish, which takes time and growth. The word he uses for put off, putting off, means get rid of dirty clothes, strip them off, do away with them. In Colossians 3 and verse 9, he gives some examples. Do not lie to one another, seeing you put off the old self with its practices. Verse 8, now you must put them all away, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and obscene talk from your mouth. Then put away all filthiness, James says. Guy in Wood says this, the word for filthiness is the word that was used for earwax that stopped up a person's ear and made it impossible for him to hear. Don't let filthiness keep you from being able to hear. And then put away rampant wickedness. And he says the term here refers to, is the one that would have referred to an overflowing sewer. In order to hear good sounds, good hearts, good messages, there has to be the removal of the bad stuff from the life and the heart. And James says that in doing this, you can receive with meekness, with gentleness, tameness, the implanted word which is able to save your souls. And I might add, or messages from your loved ones that they're sending that might save your family. I read the words of a lady who looked around at her house and saw all the outward things that were there in their lives and things that needed to be done. And then she prayed to God. She said, God, it's those, when I look around, it's those things I can't keep up with under the surface. The petty little grievances, the grudges, the resentments, the unspoken harsh feelings, the superior attitudes, thoughts and feelings that no one else knows but me and you, God. And then she writes this prayer, help me, Father, to clean my heart as I would my home. Take away all dust and cobwebs of pride, ill feelings, and prejudice. The dirt behind my refrigerator will never hurt anybody. The dirt in my heart will. She's right. And it does take God's help to do that, doesn't it? And then, having to hurry a little faster than I'd like to, the fifth one, be a doer of what you know to do. The things that kill us are not the things we haven't learned yet or we're still waiting to master. What we're responsible for is the stuff we do know. So when a loved one speaks to you about how he or she is feeling and what's going on in their lives, and when you can pick it up and watching and listening, when you had a chance to say how you feel and how you want to be understood, when your spirit has been kept under control as you go along and you try to focus on cleaning your heart, then do what you know you should in that situation. Really, that's the bottom line of James's family rules. You should do what you should. A Christian has a responsibility to do what he should himself in any relationship, whatever the other is doing. And that's what blesses a family. Not what everyone else does for you, but whether you do what you know you should toward them. So do what you should. Go first. Be an affirmative presence, an active doer of good. Contribute something helpful and positive into the situation. It starts with looking in the mirror. Look at the way James says it. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man who looks intently at his natural face in a mirror. For he looks at himself and goes away and at once forgets what he was like. But the one who looks into the perfect law, the law of liberty, and perseveres, being no hearer who forgets, but a doer who acts, he'll be blessed in his doing. I noticed recently Johnny Hester wrote about a grandpa and his precious little granddaughter, who were sitting together and talking, and she asked him, "Did God make you, Grandpa?" And he answers, "Yes, he made me." And after a significant little pause, the little girl asked him, "Did God make me too?" And Grandpa affirms, "Yes, he did." And for a few minutes, the little girl seemed to be studying Grandpa, looking up at his face. And she'd look off there at a nearby mirror and kind of stare at herself, study herself, her own reflection in the mirror. Grandpa wondered what in the world is running through her mind. He could see it in her eyes that something was, and at last she broke the silence. "You know, Grandpa, God's been doing a lot better job lately." Ain't it the truth? You know what Grandpa said he did? He took the mirrors down. To look into the mirror of God's Word, or in the mirror of what our loved ones are telling us, and to recognize that what we see there is not what we thought would be there. And then just to walk away from it, not doing a thing at all to make it any different. It's what James is warning us about. That won't work with God, and it won't work with our families either. James says if we look into the perfect law of liberty and see what a human being is supposed to be and what the one who loves us most wants us to do, and then do it, that person will be blessed in his doing. Blessed in his doing. Blessed as he's doing it and after he does it. And so will his family be blessed. You know, you look at these and I think most of us immediately can recognize, well, 5 rules would be enough to let me know I fall short at those. I want you to think about one thing. Why do you think verse 21 ends with, "which is able to save your souls"? Save your souls from what? Save the soul of your family from what? When the failures every one of us see in ourselves in one of those things right there at one time or another in our journey as we go along. With God, listening to Him, our conscience is informed, forming in our hearts belief and faith which can be expressed. Then the will is moved to not want a heart encumbered by filthiness or wickedness. And then the putting off of all of that over time, and then the positive action to bless. That's what God wants for my house and for yours if our faith lives there. It starts with hearing the good news of what God's done for us in His Son, and then saying how we feel about it. We call it the good confession. You might be here today needing to make that and ready to be identified with the work of Christ for us. If so, if you'll make it known by coming here while we stand and sing, it'd be our delight to help.